Good afternoon and welcome to Spokane Public Radio's Northwest Arts Review, a half hour exploring the people, places, and events forming the rich arts tapestry we enjoy here in the Inland Northwest and our wider Intermountain Northwest region. I'm Jim Tevenin, pleased to be your guide on this journey. Today, no surprise, more unfortunate but ultimately hopeful news from two very different regional organizations, Art on the Green Coeur d'Alene and the Metow Valley Interpretive Center. We'll also have a unique opportunity to witness a musical career in the making. That young musician, Spokane-born violinist Yvette Kraft, takes us in with this sonata by famed 19th-century virtuoso and composer Eugène Ysaÿe. This is Northwest Arts Review. For many years, we at Spokane Public Radio have had the delight and privilege of being part of a signal regional event, Art on the Green, a weekend of highly diverse art exhibits, demonstrations, and musical performances held on the North Idaho College campus early each August. We sadly report that, as with so many other summer festivals, Art on the Green is not happening in the physical, in-person sense this year due to the continuing COVID-19 pandemic. Yet, again, as so many other events of its kind, Art on the Green is very much a virtual happening this year. Here are specifics. Brought to us by Diane and Anne Solomon, sisters-in-law and members of the Citizens Council for the Arts in Coeur d'Alene, which organizes and presents Art on the Green. Diane and Anne, greetings, and tell us a little bit about what led up to the actual decision, the pulling of the switch in terms of canceling the in-person Art on the Green this year.
Okay. First of all, good morning, and thank you for inviting us to talk to you about this. The Board of Citizens Council for the Arts, as soon as COVID became a national tragedy, we started talking about safety. One of the concerns that we had was because of our size, we generally see about 30,000 patrons and people who come to attend our festival. They come from all over the U.S. They come for family reunions, you know, young and old. And it is, 52-year-old tradition in our community. In addition, I run the booth artist portion of the festival, and I have about, my initial admittance was 160 booths, and they come from all over the United States. So I started getting inquiries about safety, about what our community was going to allow, what our state was going to allow. We had concerns about, what precautions were really realistic for us. And in addition, we have entertainers that come on two stages, and they come from all over the U.S. So we had so many factors. And also, we could not control the people attending, the people coming from outside that may come with issues from their community. And we were aware that there were safety protocols that involved social distancing and involved at the certain point of time, the latest of Idaho's regulations, they govern until June 30. And June 30, the maximum group size is supposed to be 250. So we worried about it. We consulted the governor's office. We consulted basically all of the regulations of City of Coeur d'Alene and Panhandle Health District. And we decided that we could not keep our community safe So that was, it was an agonizing process, but that is the process we went through.
And I've been talking with representatives of various arts organizations, and uniformly the feeling is that the torch must continue on, that the march must be ahead. And they've been figuring out all kinds of really interesting and creative ways of dealing with the situation as it is. So you made the decision to move Art on the Green to one of these alternate methods, these virtual celebrations. Tell us a little bit about how that is going to look and who is going to be involved with it.
Well, what we are doing is creating a marketplace. So the booth artists that come to Art on the Green are accepted through a jurying process. And all of the artists who have been accepted to have a booth at Art on the Green have been invited to participate in our marketplace, which we will host on our Art on the Green CDA website. It will basically be listed by art category, so painting, pottery, jewelry, etc., and it will list all of the artists that would have had booths at Art on the Green. And then it will give you a link to their website as well as an example or two of the type of art that they do. And we're doing this at no cost to the artist, just to try to help them still be where they can make some money and be out there. And we will actually, our hope is to get that up and running by at least at the latest by the first part of July sometime. And we will make announcements about that. And then we will keep it up indefinitely at this point to just try to give those artists a little bit of a boost.
So in other words, if you wake up one morning in the middle of August and say, ah, Art on the Green, it didn't really happen this year. It happened virtually. Oh, I'm too late. So you're going to keep all of it up at your website for a while.
For certain, the artist marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
So that all those artists can benefit from that extra little bit of, you know, us trying to promote them.
Anything else that is special or unique about what you're going to do to present Art on the Green this year?
We hope to also have a few art projects that parents can do at home with their children. One of the really popular things at Art on the Green is our children's art garden. And Iris Sigler, who's been the head of that for many, many years, is working on some projects that, you know, parents can do with their kids that would be similar to what would have been presented at this year's festival. That's one of the things we're doing. So
it sounds as though you have really thought this through, and it was a heartrending decision, I'm sure, to pull the plug on the in-person festival this year. But we can certainly hope for better times next year and for a chance to actually get together, as has been typical for Art on the Green in the past. Diane and Ann Solomon, thank you so much for being with us today and telling us a little bit about how Art on the Green has coped with the current realities, and we wish you all the best.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
Information on the 2020 virtual Art on the Green is available at their website, artonthegreencda.com. For a young violinist, the ascent to a career in music is steep, involving getting the right teachers, taking as many performance opportunities as possible, both solo and ensemble. Spokane-born Yvette Kraft has certainly done all that, beginning with her first studies at age 5 with Spokane Symphony Orchestra concertmaster Matej Volsky. And also, there is the matter of music competitions, something that Yvette has recently tried and found success with. She checked in with Vern Windham for an update.
Well, I actually wouldn't have gotten to play this if I didn't participate in the Grumio International Violin Competition in Brussels, because I was looking for an international competition to do, and I saw this one, and Isai Sonata No. 4 was on the required pieces. And I thought, oh, I've never heard this piece, but it sounds cool. I listened to, like, the first 5 seconds of it. I was like, oh, okay, I could do this. And, yeah, and I learned it, and I grew to love it more and more, and I just think it's a wonderful piece.
And tell me how that competition worked out for you.
Oh, yeah, so since we were there, it was, let's see, mid-March. So they had everybody just – they just judged from everybody's first rounds because – the Belgian government was shutting everything down the next day.
Wow.
And so they did the entire competition in one day. And I won second prize in the senior division, which was very great.
Pretty exciting. And speaking of senior division, you are a senior in high school at this moment, aren't you?
Well, I'm going to be in the fall. So
oh,
I'm
you
still
would
a junior,
be.
Yeah.
Okay. So does that imply you're going to be around Spokane for another year?
Well, you know, I'm not quite sure what I'm going to be doing in the fall. I'm probably going to be in Seattle for most of the time, but getting the chance to stay in Spokane for so long, I've been in here during this entire quarantine, has been really, really amazing.
How so?
Well, just getting to spend more time in my hometown, I guess, and just, I don't know, I love Spokane. It's really a nice break from Seattle.
And you've gotten a lot of practice time, I'm sure.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
Yeah, but you are going to some sort of camp this summer, aren't you?
Well, I think all of them have canceled so far.
Oh.
There are a couple online things. I'll be doing the Sounding Point Academy, which Simon James is part of that, and a lot of other teachers and performing artists are giving master classes for that. But it's all online, so. Not the same, not nearly the same as being in person, especially for chamber music. That's just not going to happen this summer, I don't think, because all the camps I was going to do are just, yeah, canceled.
Yeah, no, you were in the youth orchestra for a while and were the concert master, and then I think you've now really been focusing on your solo playing lately,
mm-hmm.
haven't you? Amidst all that, have you had much chance to do chamber music yet in your life?
Not really. It's just so hard to coordinate because, you know, when you want to work with people who are also trying to, you know, get really good at their instruments and they have busy schedules too, just as much as you. So trying to coordinate times and especially when people live further away, it's really hard. So I haven't gotten a chance to do much chamber lately, but I'm hoping to do more in the fall.
Yeah.
If I can find some people.
And so you just played the amazing Isai Fourth Sonata for us, and it was so great. What are a few other mountains you're going to be climbing in coming time? Are you starting a big piece or two right now?
Yeah, actually, my quarantine project, per se, I've gotten through the entire Brahms Violin Concerto, which, I mean, just trying to maintain it is exhausting. I've been working on the second and third movements, and I've gotten all the way through the first. It's a mountain of a piece, but it's wonderful to be exploring it and, getting to play some wonderful Brahms.
And tell me about the world of Simon James and his other students, because aren't there several of you that know each other and
mm-hmm.
have worked together? What tell me about that world.
Well, so the place where we most, I guess, come together as a studio is we have weekly recitals, and lately we've been doing Zoom recitals, which have been great, just a good opportunity to get a little nervous and, you know, play your piece and see how it works out under pressure. And it's also just good to have that fellowship with people and support each other. It's a very supportive environment, and we get comments from Simon afterward. Yeah, that's what the studio does most of the time, and I don't know if we're going to do in-person recitals for a while, but at least for now, that's the way things are.
Sure. And I assume, I just have to assume that the act of performing on your violin is just something special and wonderful inside you. Talk about what's going on there.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Being able to share one's gift, because, you know, you practice for so long in the practice room, but ultimately it's about sharing it with other people and getting to you feel the energy of the audience, and, well, which is why it's so hard during this time to stay motivated, because, you know, you don't have anybody to play for, but that's why it's wonderful to play on the radio. But just getting to express yourself through your music and express the beauty of art, and that nothing can replace performing, I think.
Nice. Yvette Kraft, thank you for the lovely playing and the really, really thoughtfulness you have about playing.
Oh, thank you.
Real trait. Have a good time with whatever happens, and good luck with all of it.
Oh, thank you so much.
And here is the conclusion of the Eugène Ysaÿ Sonata No. 4, played in our KPBX studio by Yvette Kraft. You can hear the Ysaÿ Sonata in its entirety as a From the Studio podcast from SpokanePublicRadio.org. There, you can also now find podcasts of this and previous Northwest Arts Review programs. Last week, we heard from the Liberty Theater in Dayton, Washington, one of the arts and cultural institutions benefiting from recent federal pandemic relief CARES grants. This time, and again courtesy of Spokane Public Radio News Director Doug Nadvornik, we'll hear from a very different organization, the Metow Valley Interpretive Center.
My name is David Lefevre, and I am the Education and Outreach Director for the Metow Valley Interpretive Center. The Metow Valley Interpretive Center really came out of a recognition of the white settler inhabitants, some of them in this valley, wanting to recognize the pre-European native inhabitants. And it really just started with a simple question of, who are the Medhow people? And through a process of reconciliation, which was depicted in the film Two Rivers, a group of whites and a group of Native Americans came together and long story short, had a lot of, difficult, uncomfortable, and real conversations. And one of the things that came out of that was the desire to make sure that we didn't forget and we don't forget that there were indigenous people here before us. And that's particularly important here in the Meadow, where they were forced out. And there are few these days living here permanently. It was also traditionally a seasonal use place. So that has to play into the story as well. And so out of that, that deep desire for reconciliation, came the Medhow Valley Interpretive Center, whose mission is to create, fund, and operate an interpretive center that recognizes the pre-European Native inhabitants and also portrays the geology and the natural history of the Medhow Valley. In part, that's because you can't and you could never separate particularly indigenous peoples from the environment in which they lived for generations and generations and generations, and in which they still live. And so the Interpretive Center has displays in geology, aquatic ecology. We have seasons of people, so that's going through the seasons of the year and what Native peoples do. And we have a really robust archaeology project called the Medhow Artifact Research Project, where we're actually cataloging and collecting, if people are willing to donate them, artifacts that are found. And those help tell a deeper story of habitation in this place. And so we have some artifacts as well that are on display. Some of our displays are permanent, quote unquote, and others we change more regularly. And right now, actually, one of the benefits, to be honest, of this COVID-19 stay home, stay safe directive is that we are working hard to really spruce up some of our displays. And so we're excited to open when we can.
The Interpretive Center has come up with its own strategies for keeping its work before the public.
A benefit definitely of this time was to create the YouTube channel. The other thing that I created and hoping to record a new one today is what I'm calling Notes from the Center. So those are maybe 5 to 10 minute sort of ecology, Native culture lessons, not really lessons, but ditties, I guess would be a good word for it, that I will be recording. So yeah, I plan on continuing our web presence via our YouTube channel and continuing to record our last Sunday presentations, as well as these notes from the center. And then the last thing was that our center really functions on the hard work of a group of volunteer docents. And we had created a new docent training program this year, which came out of the feedback from the docents. They wanted a little bit better training. And so we created that this year, and we were going to have monthly training sessions with the docents. And so we're trying to do that virtually as well. And so I'm putting some of those up, and the general public can view those, listen to those. But those are really more targeted for docents. So I think trying to keep all of that good stuff going for sure into the future. But really, we want to come together. It's, almost warm hand to warm hand, although, I don't want to use that expression, but there really is something, there's something that comes out of human interaction face to face that that is difficult to get over the screen. So we're still hopeful we can come together as humans have done for a long, long time. And to do it in a safe way.
And how significant has receiving the CARES grant been for the center?
It really came at a crucial time. We had probably our biggest fundraiser to date was scheduled for March 28th. And that was going to be a film screening on a Native American storytelling film called The Winter's Tale. And we had Native American, the storyteller, coming up from Wenatchee, the filmmakers coming up. And we were collaborating with several other Medhow Valley nonprofits to host this really special evening that, of course, we canceled. Hoped that we might raise some funds for that. And so with the CARES Act and the coming through to us via the Humanities Washington Relief Grant, that really helped us not only to keep, you know, lights on and, you know, because even though we're not open, we still have to have the lights on and to keep going in that way, but also to keep the work that I've been doing, creating the YouTube channel, creating these virtual opportunities. So, you know, not only helping us to stay afloat, but also helping us to expand a little bit. And it helped cover that shortfall of the fundraiser, as well as just not knowing what kind of donations, membership support will we see. I guess we didn't really know how this would play out, but it appeared as though we were not seeing the donations that we might normally see when we have in-person presentations and visitors to the Interpretive Center. You know, we'd be open by now for sure. And we're just kind of waiting and seeing as to when we can open.
You can see David Lefevre's video work and learn more about the center at MedhowValleyInterpretiveCenter.com. Thanks for listening to Northwest Arts Review. I'm Jim Tevenin. My thanks to our news director, Doug Nadvornik, and to Vern Windham. We're grateful as well for the assistance of Diane and Ann Solomon, Yvette Kraft, and David Lefevre. A different sort of violin playing takes us out. We're hearing from fiddler Caradwyn Irvine Spatz in her group Mighty Squirrel. Caradwyn, who produces Sunday's Nacho Celtic Hour on KPBX, will be part of our virtual summer kids concert on air, online, and on Facebook Friday morning, June 12th at 10 o'clock. Joining Caradwyn on the kids' concert program will be her husband and bandmate, Greg Spatz. Also, we'll welcome Front Porch Bluegrass host Kevin Brown, who will perform along with his son, Caleb. And don't forget to join us again next week for another Northwest Arts Review.